Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Hello and welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing. It's November the 23rd, 2021. I'm Raoul Wootliff and I'm joined today by political reporter Tal Schneider and US correspondent on the line from New York, Jacob Magid. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Hi, Raoul.
Hi, Raoul.
Before we start, I want to remind you all about Streetwise Hebrew, bite-sized Hebrew classes available to the Times of Israel community, which you can sign up for on the Times of Israel website. On today's show, we're going to revisit some of the topics that the three of us discussed last week, because in all of them, there seems to have been some form of important update. We'll start with US-Israel relations and look specifically at your interview, Jacob, with Interior Minister Ayelet Shaked and what she said about Jerusalem's ties with Washington. We'll hear about the bill to limit the Prime Minister's term to no more than 8 years that passed its first reading in the Knesset yesterday night. And we'll assess yesterday's testimony of former Netanyahu top aide Nir Chefetz, the first of the prosecution's state witnesses in the ongoing corruption trial against the former Prime Minister. So Jacob, starting with you, you interviewed Israel's Interior Minister Ayelet Shaked during her trip last week to the US, and she spoke with you about a few topics. Tell us what were the main headlines to come out of that conversation.
Yeah, I'd say that they're on kind of several fronts. One was on the Abraham Accords front, which I'll get into first. She also talked about Israel's settlement policy, which is a issue of contention with the U.S., and then also the visa waiver program, which she believes will be able to move forward in the coming months in terms of getting Israel to join it and allow Israelis to travel to the U.S. without needing a visa. So starting with the Abraham Accords front, she made what I thought was an interesting comment about the possibility of expanding the accords. She met with ambassador to the U.S., Alo Taiba, the UAE ambassador, and they both kind of agreed that expanding the Abraham Accords will require the U.S. to offer its own incentives to candidate countries. On the other hand, she said that Israel is done offering its own concessions to the Palestinians in order to coax countries to join. Like we saw in last year, Israel shelved its plans to annex large parts of the West Bank in order to ink the deal with the UAE. So those two comments, they don't seem particularly new. They have been made by analysts in the past, but to be made by senior officials in the Israeli government publicly, but basically saying out loud what they kind of feel privately, that the U.S. needs to be offering kind of goodies to countries in order to get them to move, is an interesting advance. Maybe speaking more honestly about what Israel thinks is needed for the Abraham Accords to move forward. Now, this is going to be a tricky ask because the U.S. has already been, or the Biden administration, was critical of the steps, these incentives that the Trump administration offered to parties of the Abraham Accords last year, namely the sale of F-35 fighter jets to the UAE and the recognition of the disputed Western Sahara region as Morocco's territory. Those were moves that the Biden administration probably would not do, and moves that would not have done, and probably moves of the like will probably not be done as well. On the other hand, the Biden administration insists that it's supportive of the Abraham Accords and is working to kind of advance them. There hasn't been any specific news of a new country that might sign, but there have been. Just yesterday, there was an agreement signed between Israel and Jordan, with the UAE and the U.S. brokering, with John Kerry there on site to swap water and solar energy, which is a major deal that probably would not have happened under the Abraham Accords, had the Abraham Accords not happened. So it'll be interesting to see how far the U.S. is going to be willing to go in terms of these incentives that Shaked is talking about. But the fact that they were made so public, these comments were made publicly, is an interesting development, I thought.
And one of her comments about the Palestinians and Israel's building within the West Bank.
On the Palestinian issue, she kind of fell in line with what she said before, but it's interesting now that because she's such a senior member of a government that kind of is trying to straddle both ends. She said that the settlement policy is going to be something that simply the sides will have to agree to disagree, that Israel's going to continue building. Israel's happy to coordinate with the U.S. and let them know in advance when possible in terms of what plans it'll be advancing. But there's no idea that I've heard from members in the defense ministry and led by Benny Gantz, who's a little bit to the center, or Yair Lapid, who's a little bit to the left of that, who are maybe interested in trying to focus the building on closer to the green line and the so-called blocks that Israel believes it will remain in its territory in a future peace deal. Shaked says, no, we're not talking about any sort of limiting of building and construction in the West Bank. We'll build everywhere. We'll just try to be in coordination with the U.S. And they're just going to have to live with that. Now, again, it's important to put this in perspective. Shaked is one of the most right-wing members of the government, and she represents that flank And it's unclear how much of a determining factor she is at the end of the day. But she's a very senior member of the coalition and obviously a member of Bennett's party, the prime minister's party. So clearly has a real voice.
Now, after her meeting with U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas, Shaked predicted that Israelis would be able to visit the United States without a visa beginning in 2023. Tell us what would have to happen for that to go into effect and what it would mean.
Yeah, just take a step back. I mean, I think Tal could talk a little bit about this as well, how difficult the process is for Israelis to try to visit and, or to get a U.S. visa before they visit. It can take often months, if not longer. Basically, you need to sign up for an interview at the embassy. And then if you pass the interview where they try to make sure that you're not trying to stay in the U.S. long term, as there's often a fear with these post-army recruits or those who finish the army and are looking to travel a long time and aren't really able to specify when they're returning. So that a lot of adjudicators in the U.S. have been hesitant to offer visas. And now with the pandemic, getting an interview takes months, if not, I talked to one person who said it took a year for them to schedule an interview at the embassy in Jerusalem. So what needs to happen in order for Israel to be added to the visa waiver program, which is something that the Biden administration said it's willing to try to do, is that it needs to lower its percentage of rejection, the rejection rate of those trying to get visas into the U.S. Now, right now it's at 4.5%. It needs to be below 3%. And again, Shaked said that it's about explaining to the Americans the situation of Israelis, that they're not looking to stay in America forever. They're just trying to clear their heads after the army service, and they will obviously return to Israel after that. And the hope is that once that is explained, the rate will go down in the coming months. And then the next time they check that rate is in September of 2022. Several months after that, if also in addition, legislation is passed in Israel to allow the U.S. to have access to criminal records in the U.S. of certain individuals who apply for visas. If that legislation passes and the rate comes down, then Shaked believes that by the beginning of 2023, they'll be able to have Israel added to the visa waiver program.
So Tal, turning to Israeli politics, Knesset members yesterday gave their initial approval to a bill to limit the prime minister's tenure to 8 years or 2 terms. We discussed this last week after ministers gave the bill the green light. The proposal ended up passing in the Knesset by 66 to 49, but it wasn't necessarily such a breeze for the coalition, was it?
Well, you know, the bill passed 66 to 48. It's a pretty good, gap for them. And it means that you have a broad agreement on that bill. So it will definitely be difficult to change that in the future once the bill has passed. 61, it's all they need to change it. But, you know, having 66 means that more people than just the coalition supported that bill. I think term limitation has been on the table in Israel politics for many years. We actually had a bill about 20 years ago that limited the term, but it was canceled. So Israeli politics has been playing back and forward with that. And I suppose the lessons of the last 12 years were the major force in putting forward that bill. And it's not surprised that the Likud was strongly opposing, because once they finished that bill, it will be difficult to go back. And there is another argument in that bill that suggests that if you are a prime minister for just a little bit less than 8 years, and then you go off of the prime ministership for 3 years, then you can go back to another, almost 8 years. So there is a loophole in that legislation, and I don't know how it will be solved. It needs to be crafted, still need to be crafted and debated on in the Constitution Committee. There will probably be arguments about, this 3 years of a gap that you can take between terms in order to become a very long time serving prime minister.
Tell us, what's the real motivation of the coalition passing this? Since, as you said last week, it doesn't impact Netanyahu and he could change it if he came back to power. Is this just trying to send a message? And if so, what's the message?
Well, yes, it is trying to send a message, putting into a bill the concept of how too much of a lengthy period of time is corrupting the system. This is the message. So if you listen to what the Justice Minister Gideon Saar said yesterday on the podium and he explained the bill, he was obviously focusing on the problem of corruption when someone is serving for so many years. And we do see it. I mean, the former prime minister is under a corruption trial that would not be in existence if his term was limited. So, you know, 8 years is a good concept, I think, for a democracy.
Now, turning to that corruption trial, we heard yesterday from the prosecution's first suspect turned state's witness, Netanyahu's former close aide, Nir Chefetz. Last week, we discussed why Chefetz's testimony had the potential to be explosive. Was it explosive?
Yeah, the testimony took place yesterday, was explosive, colorful, and I think hurtful to the defense. I mean, Chefetz was the guy to go and get things done for Netanyahu. He actually described at one point how he managed to get the other defendant, Shaul Olovich, the chairman of the telecom company Bezeq, how he managed to sneak him into the prime minister's private house on a Friday, where at one side of the house, Netanyahu is meeting ministers and MKs, and on the other side, he's meeting this, you know, big businessman. Now, the prosecution asked Chefetz, so why would Netanyahu hit that? I mean, why would he try to avoid, Shaul Olovich from meeting his fellow Likud members? And Nir Chefetz explained that this was Netanyahu's system. He didn't want anyone to know about the doings of the, you know, of others. So actually what Chefetz was describing is the divide and conquer kind of method in which Netanyahu made sure no one knows about the other parts of the government. Everything is very, very secretive. He is, you know, at another point, Chefetz describes how he's bringing a document that was made by Olovich to the Netanyahu residence, and Netanyahu is just reading the documents when they sit together. He's reading the document that was obviously, you know, delivered with the assistance of Chefetz, and immediately thereafter he is shredding that document in front of Chefetz's eyes. And why is that? Why a person would shred a document like that? Because this is obviously was trying to cut a deal between Olovich and Netanyahu. And the deal of, obviously, this is the bribery deal that everybody are discussing. The telecom company was trying to get a regulatory favors from the prime minister in exchange for a great coverage on their website, on their news website. So Chefetz was the person to testify on those exchanges, even though he cannot cover the entire sin, he was covering pretty much, you know, huge chunks of the sin. And this was only the first day of his testimony. We are expected to hear him for weeks to come, because after he will finish, you know, the prosecution side, the defense will obviously try to tear him apart. And let me just remind our listeners that he is a state witness, which means that he was probably part of the collusion or part of this ongoing corruption. Now, Nir Chefetz, we have to remember, is a person who was, by his own admission, part of corruption for so many years. He got from the state of Israel, he got a relief not to be prosecuted. And in exchange, he gave many recordings and many pieces of information and, files and notes and so on. And he was giving the testimony when Netanyahu was sitting in the trial yesterday for 3 hours in front of his eyes. So quite a dramatic day at the Netanyahu trial.
And we will, of course, be following the trial as it continues over the next weeks and months. I want to thank you both, Jacob Magid and Tal Schneider, for joining me today.
Thank you, Raul.
Thanks, Raul. Bye, Tal.
Remember to sign up for Streetwise Hebrew, bite-sized Hebrew classes available to the Times of Israel community. You can join the community by signing up on the Times of Israel website. I'll be back tomorrow with more of what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle-Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, on thetimesofisrael.com.